I think my success is the fact that I just tried some weird shit and it worked out. And I think that if I had gone to school for like woodworking or art, then I would have been too critical to try new things. My name is Nuj, and I'm an artist with a focus on wood. You can find me on Instagram at nujandwood, and my website is the same thing, nujandwood.com.
So thank you for joining me on the Proper Job Podcast.
Thanks for having me on. So Nuj and Wood, I came up with that name because I felt like me working with wood is like a partnership. It wasn't like I had to understand the relationship with wood in order to work with it. So that's the reason behind the name.
So the idea of this is to make a piece of wood look like fabric.
Yeah. So yes, that's like the foundation of my work. But like everything that I've done since may not resemble fabric anymore, but it's derived from an older work. So like everything has been just like little evolution steps set from that point.
I'm making it sound a lot simpler than it actually is here. So do try to correct me here.
No, you have it exactly correct. It's a very simple process, which is why I have no qualms with sharing my work. I think what makes my work unique is just like the overall aesthetic. The process itself is nothing original. I laminate all of my wood together to get the thickness. I glue the pieces together. I trim off the edges. And that's how I get like my blank canvas. And from there, I sketch on my designs. And like similar to how a painter might reference a photograph when they're painting, I'll reference this piece of fabric while I'm carving. So I'll have the fabric reference. I'll make sketches onto the panel to have like reference points. I'll carve it. I go through two rounds of carving where I gouge the material, and then the second round of carving where I give it shape and massage it into place more. And then I go through three rounds of sanding where I use an orbital sander. So I do 40 grit, 120 grit, and then 220 grit. And then after that, I hand sand just to make sure that I've gotten all of the hard lines out. And from there, I do the finish job depending on what type of finish that I want.
And so like going back to the school days, because I know you trained to be an architect.
Correct.
Was that something you always wanted to be, or was that any kind of pressure? Was it perhaps you wanted to be an artist, but then you're like, you know what? I can make it be, you know, I can be creative, but also be corporate at the same time.
To be honest, I had no idea what I wanted to be growing up. So typical Asian family, my parents, they're like, you're going to be a doctor when you grow up. And my father, he's a psychiatrist himself. So it was never like financial reasons that they wanted me to be a doctor. They're all about like helping humanity, helping people. So my dad wanted me to have a career path where I could help people. So he's like, don't worry about money. Money will come, but like you have to do something that helps people, like be a doctor. In my head, I was like, okay, so I guess when you become an adult, you just choose your profession and that's it. So I actually did 3 semesters of pre-med in school, and I discovered that science did not click with me at all. Like I was getting C's and I was cheating and I'm still getting C's. And I was like, things are only going to get harder and none of this science stuff clicks with me at all. So it was weird. Like I had this really hard coming out moment with my parents telling them that I didn't want to be a doctor. And my dad, he thought that I didn't want to be a doctor because it was difficult. And it was difficult, but if I didn't have any heart in it, then it was going to be an impossible path. It was never going to work out. So I was like, I like art, I like design, let's do architecture. From there, they were a bit skeptical, but then after they saw how I treated architecture school, they realized that like I was really passionate about it. And I was doing like 3 to 4 all-nighters in school, just trying to get my projects to be the best that they can be. It was amazing. Architecture school was heavily design-based. It was fun. And I think that's the moment that I realized like architecture was it.
It sounds like you loved it then. You enjoyed doing architecture.
Yeah, I loved architecture, but that was architecture school. Architecture in the real world was completely different.
It's like 70-hour weeks, isn't it? Something like that.
It depends on each person, but I treated it like a 9-to-5. Like I honestly didn't feel invested beyond my work hours. Because like I was working in a firm. I was working under other people and I barely did any designing at all. Like the most designing I got to do was like I got to rearrange condo layouts and figure out where the bed and the bathroom goes. And like the rest of the time I was doing construction documents. So like I was just basically like a draft monkey.
Yeah, because I did civil engineering and I've bumped into a lot of architects doing, I trained to do that. I have nothing to do with it now because it's the same kind of thing. It's like you have these ideas that I think that the corporate world sells you in that you're going to be designing this and you're going to be designing that. And of course, when you start off, you know, for us, it was like you're designing one little bolt. And in your head, you're like, well, I wanted to design the whole bridge, you know. By the sounds of it, you've got that creativity and you want some of that in what you're making. And it didn't seem like you had that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think architecture is really considered corporate, but it really did feel corporate. Like there were so many hands molding the work. And the top guys at the firm, they like the entire process was probably like 2% design, the rest of it just making it work. Like how many bedrooms can we fit into this complex? How like the client wants like as much return money as possible. So it's like that type of problem figuring, problem solving. And it never felt like art to me. And architecture is art, but I think for the most part it's very practical and you're just trying to get as many dollars back as you can with your design. And that was my experience at least. And architecture school, I was designing pig farms in the sky and it was fun and you can design it as much as you want as long as like you put enough explanation behind it. The actual world of architecture wasn't like that at all. So it was at that point that I decided that like I wanted a creative outlet.
I think you've only done one interview, mate, and There's a couple on the internet which I don't think they've spoken to you. They've just made it up, this shit about you. I don't know where they've got it from. But the one I think is authentic, you were finishing your 9-to-5 job and then you got into woodworking after hours. What was the thing with woodworking? Where did that idea come from?
So to be honest, it was weird. I had it in my head. I had two options. I was either going to start painting or I was going to get in the wood shop and start making furniture and art. And I think that I knew that I had a knack for creating things with my hands because in architecture school, I probably spent the most time out of all of my peers building the physical models. And like, I remember this, like one project, I like spent 3 weeks on it where the average person spent like 4 days. So like I just knew that I loved the craftsmanship of it and the attention to detail of the physical models that like I knew that I wanted to work with my hands. So I joined a wood shop and I had never been in a wood shop before. I took this like 2-day course on how to make cutting boards. And like from that moment, I was hooked. The feeling of ownership over all of the parts was something that I didn't get to experience in architecture. Like the conceptualization, the actual production, the final products, like every single stage belonged to me. And like, even if it was just like a simple cutting board, that was the most gratifying feeling ever. So basically that was the next 2 years for me. Like I would go to work, come home, change, run to the wood shop, make cutting boards until closing time at like 9 p.m. and then go work out at the gym and then repeat.
Was architecture, the job in architecture, was it bothering you that you like, I need to find another outlet? Was it that the idea was you were going to make that shift or you were kind of in your head, I'm going to have a 9-to-5 job. It's got regular pay. I just need to find a passion.
Yeah, exactly. So I just saw it as a regular job. I saw my job in architecture as having a job like anyone else. Like it pays the bills. I put in my hours. And to be honest, like, I didn't go above and beyond. And like, for me, that was fine because I was like getting paid. I was getting my paychecks every other week. And like, for me, I was happy enough. But I didn't like, I never realized that I was unhappy. And in that moment, I don't think I was unhappy. It was just that I never had enough passion or fire to go beyond. So for me to find like a hobby, it was basically just to find something fun on the side to keep myself entertained. And I never dreamed that it would go beyond something fun for me.
So going back as a kid, what hobbies did you have then? Because normally, like, I can only speak from my experience, but like, there's been a lot of things I've tried and gone, no, that's shit, that's shit. And eventually come to things that I do enjoy. But, you know, to say that woodworking and then you enjoyed it from the get-go, what about the childhood days? You know, did you have any passions then? Was it woodworking then? Did your dad have an interest in woodworking, for instance?
No, woodworking has never been in my family or anything like that. I do want to say that my artistic side for sure comes from my mother, because she was in fashion design. So she was like, she was all about design and art and everything too. And I remember she made all of her clothes growing up. And I remember being a kid and just seeing my mom like make all of this clothing from scratch. And she would just sit around and make sketches of different ideas for clothing. And I love that. And I could always tell like a sketch from my mom from a mile away, because she has like a really distinct style.
Hey, this is Sid in post-production. I just want to introduce you to a friend of mine, Sandra Lynn. She did all the work that's required to put this podcast together. Take it away.
Podcasting can be overwhelming. Hi, I'm Sandra, and I'm a podcast producer who specializes in helping small businesses and solopreneurs. I can help you with launching your podcast or producing your existing podcast, including editing audio, creating show notes, publishing your episodes, creating audiograms and social media graphics. I can save you time so you can focus on your business. Check out my website, sandralynco.com, or send me an email at sandralynco@gmail.com. Mention you found me through Sid's podcast and you'll get 20% off any of my podcasting services.
Obviously, this helped me a lot and saved me a bunch of time. Thank you, Sandra. Back to the podcast.
I mean, as a kid, I think I've always been passionate about what I'm doing. Like, I had passion for skateboarding, and that was my life. And then when I was in high school, I did wrestling, and that was my life as well. And I think, like, I always gravitated towards individual activities, because I think that's, like, the one thing that's the constant here is that the skateboarding thing, that was just, like, me alone, just skating, doing my tricks. And then wrestling, like, it was, there is a team aspect, but at the end of the day, when I'm on the mat, I'm relying on myself. If I fail, I have no one else to blame for. The team doesn't get disappointed. It's like, that's my loss. But at the same time, my wins are my glory. And I think in a way that translates into my art, because everything that I do is self-reliant. There's no one else to look to. Like it's all on me. So in a way, like, I think I've been a terrible team player.
That's interesting. Also, by what you're saying is, whatever you do, you've always applied yourself 100% to it. And there's a determination element to you as well.
Exactly.
So then going back to that kind of when you got into your woodworking, you said you did it for 2 years and then the shit hit the fan and you lost your job in architecture.
Yeah. So I lost my job. I got laid off and, you know, I wish I had worse feelings towards that, but to be honest, it was like the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life. And I wish I could own my decision to go into art. But I think a lot of it was like, I got the nudge because I got laid off. So in a way, like, the universe kind of pushed me onto this path. But when I got laid off, I had it in my head, like, okay, like, I've had this pipeline dream of being an artist and living off of my own work, my business, my creativity. Or I could just go apply for another job in architecture. It would be easy. There's tons of architecture firms. And for my position, it's not that hard to find at another firm. So I was like, okay, 6 months, I'm going to chase this dream. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be fun. But I have to bring in money in order to make this work. And like I told my mother about this like dream, and she was like, you know, you can't make like a living from sanding tables, right? And I'm like, yeah. And for me, that was like the reason why I had to make it, where I was like, okay, I gotta show my parents like I can do this, I can support myself, like this is gonna work out. So 6 months went by and I started bringing in money, and the clients, like my client list started building up. And it was really like simple, mundane projects, but I made it work. The beginning pieces were all cutting boards and coffee tables. And then like eventually I progressed to my first art piece, like a carving. And that was about like a year later or so.
So how were you finding your clients at the start?
I got super lucky, and this is an extremely millennial thing to say, but I learned how to work Instagram. Like I was noticing what was successful with other artists and entrepreneurs on Instagram, and I applied that to my own work. Like I figured out that, yes, if you make great quality art, people are going to like it. But like that alone is not going to drive people to your page. So like the most successful thing that I've done, and this is also the thing that scares people the most, is that I share all of my process. Like there's like no secrets to what I do at all. And like people, like other artists, they shy away from sharing secrets because they don't want other people copying them. But I like my take on it is that if people want to copy you, they're going to figure out a way anyway. So I beat them to the punch. Like I'm showing the process to my work. And in doing so, I'm attracting a lot of other designers and artists who are trying to find inspiration and pretty much like blueprints on how to make work similar to mine. And so like, I don't have any qualms about sharing secrets. If people want to make my work, they're going to make it regardless. So sharing all that process has really helped build an audience of people who want to learn tips and tricks of the trade. And this also adds a lot of layers to my work because it's easy to look at an end product and see how I've arrived there. But to see the work it takes to get there from scratch, I think it adds like a whole nother layer of like appreciation.
So do you think that the kind of idea behind that is that people want to buy into you? They don't want to just see a finished product. They want to know about you and how that product is made.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that when you start selling at a certain price point, your clientele is not just buying this one piece of art. They're purchasing into the artist. They want to know who they're supporting, like what this artist stands for and like the type of work that goes into it. So they're not just buying like a pretty piece of art at this point. They're making an investment and they want to know that this piece of art they're purchasing is not just a one-off. Like they want to know that, is this artist going to make a solid body of work that will stand the test of time and appreciate the value of their work as well?
Going back to like the skateboarding and wrestling, did you have the dreams then that you could be perhaps a pro skateboarder one day or a pro wrestler? Did you think about those sort of goals back then?
I think it was a bit realistic. I think I was good at skating. And, you know, as a kid, I did get like this sponsorship from like a local skate shop, which like totally pumped up my ego. And I thought like, wow, this is like the first step. And so like, maybe after this, like some real sponsors, and it never got beyond my local skate shop giving me some free stuff here and there. But I think I was realistic enough to know that making a living from skateboarding would never happen for me, just because it's a dog eat dog world in skating, and the talent that it takes to actually make a living, but then also have a personality that's marketable, that companies want to be associated with. It's impossible, and your body can only take so much of a beating before you go into like the corporate side of skateboarding or something like that. So I don't think my fantasies ever went beyond thinking like, wow, what if?
So did you feel differently with the artwork, Rand? Because you went into the woodwork in quite a practical mindset, making coffee tables and, you know, cutting boards. Then you've made this, the leap into what we call art. I know it all could be called art, but like we're talking like things you hang on the wall here.
Right, right. I think I was a lot more foolish with my ambitions in art. And because of that, I think I've made a lot of advances because I feel like I've taken a lot of risks and I've always had my eyes on the long game. A lot of people in the beginning, they told me that like, you need to make smaller pieces to make it purchasable for people. And I was always against that because I wanted to make art pieces that would benefit my portfolio so that I would have like a thick, beefy portfolio with good work, not just little pieces here and there that I know would sell easily because people can afford it. I never wanted to appease people. I always wanted to make work that I know would make me as an artist sellable to galleries down the road.
So you did have that dream of the gallery stuff at the beginning.
Oh yeah. Like right when I made my first piece, I started dreaming right away. I was like, man, how cool would it be if I could be in a gallery and have my own solo show one day? And I think my dream started rattling off like right from the beginning, because it's weird though, because like I was never in tune with the art world at all. Like it was never on my radar. But after I started making art and then I started following other artists and seeing the lives that they have, I was like, you know what? It's possible. If someone else can do it, why can't I? After like I saw how amazing it is to have a life revolving around the art that you create, that's all I wanted to do. That's the only thing that I wanted for my life.
How did you make that jump from the practical element of coffee tables and, you know, cutting boards to this kind of textured piece that you create now?
It's been like a meandering path. I didn't know I was going to make my first art piece until I decided to make it. And I don't know, like, I guess I wanted to make art that people wanted, but not what people needed. And in a very like egotistical way, I just wanted people to desire my work. And like in a twisted way, I kind of reasoned with myself that people were buying my coffee tables and my cutting boards because there were practical needs. And I was like, you know what? Like, I want to prove to myself that my work is different, that I can stand out and people will want my work because it's a beautiful art piece coming from me. That was my decision to make art. And the very first art piece that I ever made, I knew that I was going to work with wood because I was already in a wood shop. And I think the go-to is to make sculptures of people. So I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to make like a sculpture of a person, like what should they be doing? Should it be a man or a woman? Should they be old or young? Like, what are their expressions? Like, and I have all of these questions that I got stuck. Like, I didn't know what to make. I asked myself a question. Okay, so like, what feeling do I want to convey? And I had to boil it all down. Okay, I was like, I want something calming, something like people can meditate to, something like beautiful and majestic and flowing. So I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to try to recreate the essence of bed sheets and then put it on a wall. So for me, like I made this carving with like little twists, and that idea evolves more so from like the notion that I wanted to bring peace and calm into a home, because I think the home is like the sanctuary. That's where you want to feel peace. And I think that everyone can agree that being in your bed, twisted around in your sheets, and like under your covers is one of the most safe places like you can feel, and it's comforting. And I think that I was trying to capture that feeling and then put it on a wall. And when you come home every single day, you can see this. And that's like that's something that I wanted people to feel when they enter their home, is like this calm and peace and comfort. I think from that moment, like, I had this feeling of elation, and similar to when I made my first cutting board, it was the best feeling I've ever had. So, but I didn't know that I was going to go down this entire path and make a million more like pieces similar in the style. This one type of art can produce like an infinite number of different feels of the similar aesthetic. So from there, I just kept exploring this path.
We've spoken about architecture school and there's portfolios you create there. Was that on your mind when you say you wanted to make this kind of like thick, this kind of like advanced, this ranging portfolio for yourself? Do you think that idea came from architecture school, or you were just seeing other artists on Instagram or wherever it was and seeing that they had a range of work and thinking, I need to do something like that?
I think in the very beginning, I was still discovering my voice artistically. And in the very, very beginning, after the first few art pieces that I made, I didn't have my portfolio in mind. Like, I just wanted to make beautiful work and I wanted people to like it. So I think it was more so like my core feelings about it, that I just wanted my art to survive. But I think like maybe half a year into it, I started thinking more long game, like, okay, so this is where I take it seriously. This is where I have to think about like what my body of work looks like overall and how this will be perceived if I approach galleries. And I also had a moment of realization that, okay, I've made a lot of practical stuff, like the cutting boards, the clocks, the coffee tables, and all of this stuff looks great, but I'm making artwork now. And to be considered an artist, I had to make it clear, am I a designer that makes furniture, or am I an artist that makes artwork? So I actually scrubbed my website clean. I took off all of like my practical stuff, and like all you can see now is my artwork, and it's my most recent pieces too, because I feel like it's important to curate the image that I have. And I feel like extremely proud of every single thing that I've made, because I truly believe that everything that I've made is a stepping block. Like, I had to make the cutting boards in order to get to the clocks. I had to make the clocks to get to the coffee tables. And like, all of this is to lead to my first art piece finally. And I don't think that it's possible for me to have started with an art piece from the get-go, because for me, that felt like a million-dollar idea. And I don't think ideas can exist on their own. Like, it has to come from something that you've previously done.
So it's like a process you sort of go through.
Exactly.
Was there a kind of like an etiquette? Because after I did my civil engineering degree, I went to art school. I did product design, and engineering school was all like chinos and polo shirts. And then art school was all of a sudden, you know, do whatever they want, dress however you want. And there was all these kind of like gallery openings I was going to. And I noticed there was kind of an etiquette thing to deal with when you were going to these things. You know, all the artists were acting a certain way. And certainly the gallery owners, there was this kind of like us and them. Is that kind of what you've experienced with this kind of change of image when you went from being a designer, furniture maker, practical, whatever you want to call it, to this kind of artist? You obviously got this goal to be in the galleries. Did you think you needed to sort of like change what you show to the public a little bit?
I was extremely proud of every single thing that I've made, but I couldn't show it all because a lot of it would have hurt me when I present myself to certain galleries. Because like, as you know, like each gallery kind of has their own aesthetic as well. So I had to make sure that whatever they saw on my website, they had to like it all. They're not going to ask me to reproduce works, but they have to know that whatever I make, they're going to like. My entire body of work that they're able to see, they have to like it all.
So when you made that twisting bedsheet, that kind of texture, obviously, you say then I take it you kind of knew you were onto something at that point. Was there a kind of a big reaction on social media to that?
Yeah, I think it was actually received really well. I mean, I'm like far from the first person to take a grinder to wood and just carve. Like, I think people have been doing that since the beginning of time. Just like wood is like one of the most popular natural resources. I think anyone in a wood shop has the capability of shaping wood. But I think like what helped me in my process was the fact that I never went to school for this. So like, I think my take on this manipulation of wood is a little bit refreshing, because I would love to say that my style is unique, and when people look at my work that they know it's a Nuge piece. So I think it's helped me that I don't follow a school of thought.
Looking at like being trained as an artist and going to university, that and versus your approach of doing it, trying it, failing it, and then, you know, refining your process as you go along, you would say that the latter, your way of doing it, getting your hands dirty, is the best way of learning, not university for artists.
You know, like it's hard for me to say like what's successful, what would be successful for other people, but I think my success is the fact that I just tried some weird shit and it worked out. And I think that if I had gone to school for like woodworking or art, then I would have been too critical to try new things, because there are like the art critics in school that you sit with and they tell you like, oh, like, no, don't do this. This would look bad, or don't do this because most people wouldn't do that. There's these people out there telling you what's good, what's bad, like, don't try this. So I didn't have any of those rules in my head. I just tried weird things. And I've done a lot of things that I think wood purists would hate. Like the fact that I paint my wood, that I use colors, like all, like I know all of these like wood purists are looking at my work and they're like, oh, what a jackass. But in a way, me being a jackass and doing something that's different from the norm, I think that makes my work stand out.
Because I know in architecture school, there are those times where you hang your work up on the wall and then you have the critics going round and going like, why have you done that? And they've got to have a reason for it. I suppose you going through that process made you kind of like anti, in a way, that process and want to do things your way without having to explain it to some critic.
Exactly. Like I was hungry to make work that wasn't constrained by other people. And that's something that I didn't get to experience in architecture. So I think that's why I feel that it's so gratifying to make my own work without like other people sitting around me telling me what I should and shouldn't do with my work.
Do you have the negativity on social media with the wood purists?
I think everyone who follows me on my page, they follow me and they're seeing my work because they like it. So in a way, like when you're on my page, it's kind of like an echo room. Like everyone's very supportive and they like my work because they're following my work in the first place because they liked it. But I think when you see my work reposted by like other art accounts or like wood art accounts, you get a lot more unbiased opinions. And I do get some haters here and there, but honestly, like, and it sucks. I've read those comments and I'm like, wow, these people really hate my work. But then I'm like, you know what? It's art. Like, you're never going to please everyone. And that's something that you hear all the time. And that's something that I've had to repeat to myself. Like, yeah, you know, it's art. It's subjective. Some people are going to love it. Some people are going to hate it. But that's life. So.
And it seems like a bit of a struggling thing, obviously, with some negative comments. But like, given that your past experiences, when someone says you can't do it, that kind of just spurs you on more, motivates you even more.
Oh, yeah, definitely. When someone tells me that I can't do it or that I shouldn't do something, I'm like, wow, well, like, screw that. Like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to prove to them that it is possible to do something like that. But like, I've turned the negative comments into fuel, because sometimes the haters can be right. So I think it was like sometime like after a year that I've started making my carvings that someone left a comment saying, this is all the same. It wasn't someone who was like really invested in my work. They didn't notice that I was doing something different with each piece, maybe subtle changes. But then I was like, wait a second. If it all looks the same to him, then he must not be the only one. There, like, other people could be thinking it too without saying it. So I took it to heart, and he probably meant like no malice by it. But I think I was like caught up in that comment for a few days, just bouncing around in my head. I'm like, wow, I found something successful and I'm just repeating it, but in different ways. So I think from that point, I always made sure that like every single piece that I make, I try to learn something new or try something different. And I think at the core of my work, I'm always, always, always pushing for my work to evolve. And I think that for an artist to make the same thing forever, that's going to be the death of my art. So my goal with every single piece is to make my last piece better than the last.
So how did that first gallery show go for you? Like, how did, tell me the process of that. Were you behind that quite a bit of like sending pictures to the galleries you wanted to be featured in? Or was an invite kind of like put through your letterbox and please come and display your work with us?
I wasn't proactive in contacting galleries when the first one reached out to me. I think that I was very critical of my work and I never felt like my work was there yet. I didn't feel like my work was good enough that I should be approaching galleries. I kept telling myself like, okay, like, make one more piece, add it to the portfolio, and then start reaching out. But then after that piece is made, I'm like, no, it's not there yet. It's not there yet. Like, keep going, keep going. So the first one actually reached out to me on Instagram, and it was like a local gallery. And like, I was a little bit skeptical only because like, I feel like for me to lock down with a gallery so early on in my career could also be a bad thing, because if they're marketing the work that I had at that moment, then that's like the work that I'll be known for, and that's what I'll have to keep making. So what I wanted to do, ideally in my head, I wanted to just like create different bodies of work that are all me, but they're not all the same. So if I worked with a gallery, I could just produce different types of work and it'll never be boring. So the first one reached out. It was a local gallery in La Jolla, and it was actually like a really smooth process. Like, the guy was super friendly. He seemed supportive of my work. He wanted to champion me. So I was like, you know what? Let's do it. And so that was my first step. And that was in May or April. And since then, I've locked down two more galleries. So one in Singapore and then one in Miami. So like, this year has been like really pivotal in my work, and where like I opened that door and then all of a sudden things are flooding in now.
I want to talk about where you are now, like the stress of what you're doing versus the stress of being in a job. I expect that you're going to tell me the stress now is far higher than being in a job. And also at the same time, you probably wouldn't change it. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the stress now is constant because like everything that I do is like relying on my ability to create, to be able to feed myself and to have like a long career. Like, I have to make artwork that sells. And I think like the pressures of that is constant. Like, I'm constantly thinking about, okay, like, I'm working on this, but what's the next project? And the next project that I'm doing, I'm trying something new. Are people going to like it? Is it going to sell? Am I going to make enough money that I can continue creating? I'm not at a point in my career where I know that I'm set for life. And I think that there's very few artists who can say that. And it's like, with that pressure, it's also exciting. Like, I love the pressure of having to perform, but it's taxing because it's also the mental toll of constantly questioning if your work is good enough and how people are going to perceive it. It's constantly like looking for validation, which sucks because I would probably be making this stuff whether people liked it or not. But I do rely on people liking my work in order to have a living and make money. So there's like a balance in there. And I don't know, so far it's fared me well.
You talk about that balance, and obviously when you're running your own business, there's a lot of hats to wear. You've kind of got that whole Instagram content to do. You've got to be an accountant. You've got to be a salesman, as long as, you know, doing your current art. When did you kind of make the conscious decision that was like, shit, like you're spinning too many plates here. I need some help.
Yeah. So I actually did some career planning with one of my really good friends earlier this year. So I told myself one of the things that I really want is an assistant. And then I need to find a few people who will champion me in the art world. And I got both of those. Like right after I wrote those goals down, they happened, because there's like magic to writing goals down and seeing it, because it's like you put it out into the universe and it's real. So I found an assistant, full-time assistant. He's dedicated. I couldn't ask for a better person. His name's Carl, by the way. I also have a studio manager now, and she's absolutely amazing. And I think like every artist needs her. Her name's Erin Page. She adds like a whole layer of professionalism to my image and my brand. And, you know, as an artist who excels at making art, I often overlook the fact that I need to deal with people in a professional setting. So she does that for me. She manages my art. She makes sure that everything is on time and that like everything's flowing. And right now she has like a production list of all the pieces that I need to make and for whom. She is on top of it. I love her. I also hired a CPA accountant last week. So like I'm learning that up until this point, I've been wearing all of these different hats. But if I can delegate any of that work to other people to take care of, then I should do it, because it allows me to focus on my art more and become a better artist.
It sounds like you get to the point of understanding what you need to do and how that job's going to work and become good at it. And then you're like, right, I've learned that. Now I need to give that hat to someone else because I need to focus on the art.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, like I never would have expected this year in particular to be a good year with like COVID and everything. But this year has been like the pivotal year for my work. And like, it's like the most money my business has ever brought in. But at the same time, I'm not living a lavish lifestyle where I'm blowing this money on nice things. I've used all of this money to reinvest back into my business so that it can last for a lifetime. So like all of that money is going to my assistant, it's going to my studio manager, and then I hired a CPA on top of that. So I think like these are all steps that are necessary to make a career. I didn't go buy a lot of things, which would have been fun, but wouldn't have benefited my career in any way.
Where's that business sense come from then, mate? Like architecture school doesn't teach you that. Is that like come down from the parents, or you've always had this kind of entrepreneurial sense built into you?
No, the past few years have been a crash course in running a business. And I always knew that artists are not entrepreneurial people. They're artists. They make art. They make beautiful art that people love, but they're not good with business. So I've like really forced myself to think entrepreneurially and figure out how to make this business survive. So I think my roommate, he's more business minded. So like I talk to him a lot about like what I should do. I bounce a lot of ideas off of him. And I've learned that my business is getting to a point where I have to delegate the work.
What kind of career advice would you have hoped someone had given you when you were younger then, mate? What kind of advice you wish you'd received?
You know, that's a hard one. I think I already take this to heart, but take as many risks as you can. I think that like no risk, no reward. Like if I didn't take all of the risks that I have, then I wouldn't have ended up with a business that stands out.
Yeah. What currently are you planning then, if you can share any details, or perhaps not what you're currently working on, but what's going through your head for like maybe a couple of months down the line?
Ooh, well, so I told you that I signed on with 3 galleries this year alone. I've always worked my ass off. I've always been working on a project. And even like in the very beginning where I would have like gaps in commissions, I would be making projects for my inventory. So I was constantly working. But now my production has changed because now I have galleries that are awaiting work to come into their space. So I have deadlines and I'm not working from project to project anymore. And it's different because I have 7 different pieces that are in the works at the moment, which is crazy for me to handle because like only 10 months ago, I was working one project at a time. So for me to juggle all these projects is pretty nuts. But I mean, that's like where my team comes in, like Erin, she's managing my projects. She's helping me with all that. And then I have Carl, my assistant. He is helping like glue everything together. He's prepping the pieces. He's making sure that I have the canvas to carve on, like the clean pieces. And he's also helping me like do a little bit of carving and sanding as well, where I think it's like suitable for his abilities. So for the next few months, it's like it's all production. And it's an extremely exciting time for me because I do think that my artwork is at a point where I should be proactive in getting galleries. So I think like in the coming year, once I've gotten enough artwork to my current galleries, I might reach out to more.
Okay. So when in terms of your workshop, you talk about your studio. I've seen pictures of this on your Instagram. Is that a shared workspace or is that something you own or rent?
No, it's a co-working space. So it's basically like, it's called Makatory. And basically it's like a gym membership. You pay a monthly fee and then you have like free reign over all of their equipment. So I rent out like a private space within Makatory. And I pay like $500 a month for rent for like this space that I can like store all of my stuff, my projects. But it's like, again, going from one project at a time to juggling 5-7 right now, I'm actually maxing out what I'm able to store here. So one of my goals for the near future is to actually have my own studio space, which is a huge investment because like with all the equipment that I need, and then you need like the air filtration system, like the air compression, like infrastructure built into whatever space that I go into. I also need a paint booth and then all of the equipment upfront costs as well. So planning for that is going to be one of like the biggest steps I'll ever take in my career. But I expect that to be happening within a year or so.
Don't write that down too quickly, mate. You know what happens when you start writing things down. Next week it'll be working it out. So does that rent for that place include the tools then?
I mainly use all of my tools, but like the tools that I do use here is like the chop saw and like the table saw. And then I use the CNC to cut out like the circles for my shapes and stuff and to flatten my pieces. But everything else is power tools done by hand.
What is your go-to tool?
I would say the grinder is the tool that's in my hands the most. So like the 4.5-inch angle grinder with different attachments for the heads. That's what I use to gouge out my materials and give the surfaces the shape that they have. And I've also gotten to a point where the CNC is also very instrumental in my work, even though I use it for its like very, very basic needs. Like I use the CNC to flatten my work, which I would not be able to ever give a flat surface using like a planer or something like that. So I use the CNC to flatten my work. And I use it to cut out like the circles or shapes if I have like multi-component pieces in a project.
Are these ideas coming from your head? Do you have like reference, Pinterest, Instagram, like for your color combinations, for instance? Where are these initial ideas coming from for you? Are you one of those people that sort of meditates and an idea hits you? Or are you sort of constantly referencing books and magazines and social media?
It's a combination of both. I think that the process of my work being like building blocks is a huge part of it. For my first carving, like I left it like natural finished wood. It was cherry wood. And from there, like I had these ideas, like what if I dyed it black? And then I dyed it black. And like, what if I made a piece in black, but used ash wood so you can still see the green even after you dye it or give it paint? And then like, I was like, okay, well, what if I colored it? And so then I tried color. And then I go, okay, well, what if I tried adding metallic pearls that they use on cars to give it like a shimmer? So then that worked. And then, so I think my work has always been evolving from what it was previously, but I do find a lot of inspiration from other artists. And it's more so from artists who are doing work unlike myself. Like I find a lot of inspiration from graffiti artists or like artists who are working with glass, and like all of that inspires me to like try my work in different ways. And for the colors, I find a lot of inspiration from the graffiti artists who are extremely like experimental and adventurous with their use, their color palettes and everything. So I do save images sometimes where I think like, wow, like that color palette would look good on this piece. But if I tweaked it this way a little bit and then carved it so that like I could use this color here. So I do find inspiration from other artists as well.
What are your plans for the rest of the day?
I'm already at Megatory, the studio here. So like I'm in one of their office spaces. So the studio is downstairs and I'm standing all day. I'm on the tail end of two pieces for this gallery in Singapore. So hopefully these two pieces will be done within 2 weeks.
Are you an early starter then?
I don't know. I guess that's relative, but I think I'm somewhat an early starter. Like my daily routine is wake up between 6 and 6:30. I'll do a workout. There are home workouts now due to COVID. I'll head off to the studio around 9.
And then what time are you finishing?
I normally stay here until 6:30 or 7. And then when I get home, I clean up, I eat. And I like more so these days, like I'd say like 70% of the time, I'll do computer work at home. I'll do like project planning for what's to come. I'll answer emails. So it's like work like all around the clock. But sometimes I'll take Netflix breaks.
Yeah, you got it, man. Nooch, thank you very much for joining me today.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Cheers. Nice one, bro.